Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the April 24th edition of the County Chronicle, and again we'll start with the first page news. Approved Code of Conduct Policy from the Tuscola School Board by David Porter. The Tuscola School Board approved its new Sportsmanship Spectator Code of Conduct with one no vote. Daryl Spillman continued his objection to the stringent policy whereby a violator would be dispelled from school events for half of the remaining school year. He expressed concern that it could be interpreted to include all school events, including music performances and parent-teacher conferences. Superintendent Gary Alexander said, "Parents have a right to attend conferences with teachers regardless of the policy, and that the code is titled Sportsmanship." Other board members pointed out that the code is an appeal process, so parents who believe they've been wrongly accused can address the penalty with the board. The board held a first reading of the 2024-25 school handbook and then moved the May meeting to May 28th before heading into closed session. The board approved retirement of Christy Hole at the end of the 2026-27 school year, as well as the resignation of Lainey Banta as high school girls' golf coach. They approved the hiring of Dave Jones as North Ward teacher, Daniel Nelson as a high school history teacher, and Preston Brown as junior high boys basketball volunteer. The board also approved contracts for the school nurse, technology director, high school principal Justin Bozarth, and North Ward principal Jason Wallace. Salaries were not included in the contracts, which said that they would not be less than the previous year. Alexander said he's going to be doing a deep dive into the school's finances as some revenue streams are down. He said sales tax revenue is down $22,000 from last year, and the personal property tax revenue is down $909,000 from what was projected, although another payment is expected. It may be fine, he said, but they'll be working on an analysis this week. Administrator reports will be in next week's edition. The next article, Villa Grove School Board Revisiting Solar Plan by Gabriella Agius. The Villa Grove School Board was revisited April 15th by Ideal Energy about developments in the solar project put on hold in September of 2023. After meeting with Ameren, Corporate Ideal Energy has reevaluated the solar plan for the district. The district had initially looked into utilizing both ground and roof arrays. After revisiting, Ideal Energy determined that the roof array would not get enough sunlight. Ideal Energy decided in the revised plan to utilize a smaller solar, which Ameren incentivizes. The district uses the most power during events. The system size is 162 kilowatts with a $475,000 installation cost. The system would generate a $360,000 cash flow over 25 years with the funding mechanism. Estimated first year of production is 214,000 kilowatt hours, which would be 30% offset from the district's current billings. Ideal Energy also provided a different route for financing through King's Financial, a company who works with local school districts and their financing. Kendall King visited the board and provided more options for financing. One of the options is utilizing an alternative revenue bond, which will be paid for with credits, incentives, and energy savings. Another option, which was recommended by King, was to tie the cost into the existing bond schedule. This would also allow for tying the solar cost into other project costs. One of the incentives for beginning the project sooner rather than later is the possibility for incentives from the state. The board did not make any decisions regarding solar at the current meeting, but decided to look back into the possibility once they looked back at their five-year plan. The board approved the meeting dates for the 2024-2025 school year, as well as the first reading of Press Plus issue number 114. Also approved was the renewal of the ICRMT insurance policy, which is administered by Lohmann Ray Insurance. The cost last year was $74,000, and this year's cost was $86,000. This increase wasn't as large as expected due to the recent 43% increase in property appraisal value. The board held a discussion about implementing e-learning days in the district. These would be separate from emergency weather days the district sets aside each year. The board proposed that e-learning would be capped at around 2 days and would only be used if the weather conditions warranted them, unlike a typical snow day that students may use as time to play outside. The days wouldn't be used to learn new curriculum, but instead would be spent catching up on old work or reviewing past subjects. The district is not taking any action, but wanted to discuss the subject before moving forward. Superintendent Carol Munson met with Petrie Kuhn in regards to the tiling project that was recently completed. So far, water has not been leaking into the building. However, contractors gave a quote for fixing water damage in the home economics classroom as well as the resource room in the high school. The floor has signs of buckling due to onset water damage, which would cost about $25,000 to fix. The board will reconvene on May 20th at 6 p.m. The next article is Arthur Village Board, Water Rates Going Up, Pool Needs Help, by Ariana Cherry. The Arthur Community Pool, built in 1980, has provided summer entertainment for over four decades, creating 40 years of fond memories for Arthur residents. The pool still has some life in it. It does not need to be replaced, stated Jeremy Hale at the most recent meeting of the Arthur Village Board, held April 15th. The pool is now facing financial challenges, as its maintenance costs have been steadily increasing in recent years. The pool is seeking partnerships to help share the cost of operational expenses. Since 2020, the pool's finances have been in the red, with labor expenses reaching approximately $28,000 last year. We are in no way advocating that we shut down the pool, but we need help paying for these expenses while putting on other programs, Hale explained. Other items discussed and voted upon included: effective June 1st, the board approved a 2% increase in water and sewage rates, resulting in an additional $21,000 in annual revenue. Last year, no rate adjustments were made. The board approved a total of $24,900 in expenditures. Comptroller Erica Carter stated the village had filed insurance claims for three roofs and police vehicles for hail damage from recent storms. Carter provided an update on village finances, reporting the checking account had a balance of $894,000, water and sewer account balance was $127,000, and the TIF account was $252,000. Arthur's Lion Club received approval from the village to hold a tractor pull event at Jerkins Park and the Lagoon area on Saturday, August 3rd. Local volunteers will assist with parking, while young Marines will manage the concession stand and help with the post-event cleanup. 2024-2025 local tourism grant recommendations were approved and awarded to Simply Arthur, Arthur Area Association of Commerce, and the Illinois Amish Heritage Center, totaling $12,000. Simply Arthur was approved for an economic development grant in the amount of $41,000. Public Works Department was granted permission to advertise for part-time seasonal summer help. Fiscal year 2024-25 budget proposal was approved, with the largest increase for the community building maintenance, as a new roof is needed, along with updating the floors and doing some repainting. There was $20,000 raised in the administrative fund, and most of the other accounts were left the same from the previous year. Another article from the Arthur School Board, Building Support for Upgrade Referendum, by Ariana Cherry. Superintendent Shannon Cheek continues to inform the public about the urgent need for renovation and repairs in the district's building. During the Arthur School Board meeting on April 17th, Cheek shared photos showing plaster work needed in the Lovington Grade School. Additionally, he mentioned lingering HVAC and plumbing issues at the high school, which will continue to increase as the building ages. Cheek warned that the plumbing and HVAC issues at the ALH High School building could come with significant price tag. There's an issue of some of this building not being fit for students to get a good education in the 21st century, he stated. Cheek is planning open houses for the public to witness the issues firsthand on May 11th, 14th, and 15th. Recently, he held meetings at Atwood Lovington and the high school in Arthur. The feedback received from these meetings was positive, and some plans were developed based on the surveys and focus groups. Cheek is committed to providing information about the district school building and addressing any public concerns. His aim is to build support for a future referendum to secure funding for the necessary renovations. Other items discussed and voted upon: three student athletes were recognized at the board meeting. These ALAH school records are since the 2014 annexation. One, Claire Seal, basketball, career points, career rebounds, two-point field goals, career free throws made, points in a season, rebounds in a season, two-point field goals in a season, made free throws in a season, points in a game, and rebounds in a game. Maddox Sturrett, football, tackles in a season. Connor Nettles, football, career receiving touchdowns, season receiving touchdowns, basketball, career steals, and season steals. Perla Juarez Cuevas, a junior, was recognized for receiving a gold medal at the state FCCLA conference in Springfield that she and Mrs. Vogel attended earlier this month. Cuevas also qualified for the national competition for her portfolio. The school district received donations from the following: La Cascada, $790, that went toward the upcoming senior class trip; Arthur Women's Club donated $1,000, two anonymous donors donated a combined total of $3,000, and Kirby Medical made a donation of $500 to go toward the new book vending machine. It was reported that the bathroom upgrades at Arthur Grade School are going very well and are ahead of schedule. Once school is over for the year, the work on the second set of bathrooms will begin, as well as the bathrooms at Lovington Grade School. Shannon Cheek stated that he was very excited about this project. A $286,000 bid was received from Industrial Services for work on the roof at the high school building. The work will begin sometime in June or July. The board approved a job description for English as a Second Language instructor. This job description was created in case the district's need to post a job in the future. We have been fortunate enough to have one of our Spanish teachers to provide support at the Arthur Grade School, said Cheek. A 5-year lease, $2,000 per month, with Watts Copy Systems was approved. The 2023 single audit report was approved. The renewal of the IESA membership for the 2024-2025 school year was approved. Superintendent Cheek was authorized to preview the contract with CORE for construction manager services. The personnel report: certified, approved hiring Emma Lee for 6th grade ELA position at Arthur Grade School. Approved hiring Kenneth Parks as high school math teacher. Approved hiring Kate Burdick as the new special education coordinator. Accepted resignation from Kat Burnick as special education teacher. Approved hiring Katie Baldwin as summer school teacher. Approved hiring Mitch Wilson for summer school driver's ed. Consider certified staff requests for leave of absence. Consider certified staff requests for leave of absence. Non-certified: accepted Mary McGee resignation as a custodian for Atwood Hammond Grade School. Extracurricular: approved hiring Don Strode as a volunteer bass fishing coach. Approved hiring Kenneth Parks as the boys' head varsity basketball coach. Accepted resignation from Chantel Benefict as National Honor Society sponsor. Accepted resignation from Jessica Van Osdahl as head VH volleyball coach. Approved hiring Stephanie Hale as the JH assistant softball coach. And finally, the Tuscola City Council signed agreement on NC Street project. The Tuscola City Council on Monday approved a memorandum of understanding with HMH Rentals for development of townhomes on NC Street. Back in December 2023, the council approved an engineering services agreement with Donahue Associate not to exceed $14,800, subject to equal participation from the developer. City Administrator Drew Howell said the purpose of the engineering was to plan a water main extension on NC Street to save the development and a possible further extension beyond the development to improve the city's water distribution system. He said the city believed it was in their best interest to collaborate on the design in hopes of sharing costs. We've only recently reached a tentative agreement to proceed as originally planned, he said. The MOU spells out duties and obligations for the water main extension. In other business, the city approved its budget for the fiscal year 2025, approved the annual pool concession with Gina Romine for Tropical Snow, approved the FY 2025 wage and salary roster, approved the annual appointments to boards and commissions, approved the list of temporary summer hires with wage upgrades due to minimum wage increases. Pool managers are Heidi McFarland and Kate Moody. Approved annual water and sewer write-offs. Approved a final pay request of $115,000 to Futz Construction for downtown improvements. Approved a community building lease with alcohol for Linda Ramirez for a quinceañera on May 11th. Approved a women's club walk for child abuse awareness April 27th. And approved closing Chicago Avenue behind the police station during remodeling. We'll move now to the obituaries. Luella S. Biddle, 97 of Champaign, passed away on Friday, April 19th, 2024. Funeral services will be held at 12 noon on Saturday, May 4th at the Joins Funeral Home in Newman with Pastor Matt Matthews of Champaign First Presbyterian Church officiating. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the funeral service, 11 a.m. to 12 noon. Glenn E. Stumeyer, 92 of Tuscola, passed away at 8:15 a.m. Monday, April 22nd, 2024 at the Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, April 24th at the Emmanuel Lutheran Church, 600 East North Line Road, Tuscola, with Pastor Jason Bertan officiating. Burial with military gravesite rites will be at Lewis Cemetery, rural Tuscola. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the services at the church. John Jacob Giles, 84 of Tuscola, passed away on April 20th, 2024 at Carl Hospital in Urbana, surrounded by his loving family and friends. A visitation will be held on Sunday, April 28th at Joins Funeral Home in Villa Grove from 2 to 5 p.m. The funeral mass will be held at St. Mary's Catholic Church in rural Pasotum at 10 a.m. Monday, April 29th. Memorial donations may be made to the Villa Grove Alumni Association, Sacred Heart Catholic Church, or donor's choice. E. Sue Parker, 53, of Rantoul, formerly of Villa Grove, passed away Sunday, April 14, 2024, at 5:03 p.m. at Carl Hospital in Urbana. A celebration of Sue's life will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, May 4th, at the Living Hope Fellowship Church in Villa Grove. Memorial donations may be made to the Joins Funeral Home, P.O. Box 34, Villa Grove, to help with funeral expenses. Ruth Ann Lauder passed away on March 16, 2024, in the presence of her loving family. A service will be held at 12 noon on Sunday, April 28th at the Vine Street Christian Church in Arthur. In Ruth's honor, donations will be made to the Vine Street Christian Church and Centennial Christian Church in Bloomington. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Deanne Lynch died on Sunday, December 17, 2023. She was born November 29, 1957. A celebration of life gathering will be held from 12 to 4 p.m. Saturday, April 27th at the Tuscola Moose Lodge, 807 East Southline Road in Tuscola. John S. Albin, 95, of Newman, died on Saturday, April 20th, 2024, at his home, surrounded by his loving family. A visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, April 25th at the Joins Funeral Home in Newman. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. on Friday, April 26th at Wesley Chapel Church with Steve Allen officiating. Burial will be followed in the Albin Cemetery. Joins Funeral Home is assisting the family with arrangements. Memorial donations may be made to the Wesley Chapel Church or the Albin Cemetery. Joanne Vest, Tales of Sex and Murder. That's how Joanne liked to describe her books. Joanne Gibbs Vest, known to her readers as Joanna Wayne, was a gifted storyteller who wrote more than 60 novels with Harlequin. For the past 30-plus years, Joanne took us from alligator-infested swamps to the dark alleys of New Orleans to the ranches of South Texas in search of danger, intrigue, and romance. Joan passed away on March 25th, 2024, at the age of 83. In honor of her love of learning, Joanne's body was donated to science to support research and innovation so that others can live longer and healthier lives. Rochelle Ellen Boyd, 84, of Lovington, passed away at 12:05 a.m. Thursday, April 18, 2024, at the Arthur Home. Funeral services were held Sunday, April 21st, at the McMullen Young Funeral Home, Lovington. Visitation was held prior to the services Sunday at the funeral home. Memorials may be made to the Lovington Volunteer Fire Department. Sheila Ann Barnes, 76, of Tuscola, formerly of Arcola, passed away peacefully at Sarah Bush Lincoln Hospital at 7:52 a.m. Monday, April 15, 2024, with her family by her side. A celebration of life will be held Saturday, April 27th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the Fellowship Hall located at 698 South Sycamore, Villa Grove. Another article, Parkland Art Exhibit on display through May 4th. The Geertz Gallery at Parkland College announced the scholarship and award winners of its 56th annual juried Student Art and Design exhibition on display in the gallery through May 4th. The exhibition comprises student works produced within the last year in Parkland Art and Design classes, including photography, painting, drawing, metals, three-dimensional and two-dimensional design, color theory, graphic design, figure drawing, and ceramics. Members of Parkland's art faculty selected the exhibiting works from submissions, and the exhibit includes close to 200 works of art. The public is invited to view the strength and quality of Parkland's art and design program through these artworks. A reception honoring the participants was held on Thursday, April 11th. During the celebration, students received several awards and art scholarships. The following is a list of students in the County Chronicle coverage area with art in the juried exhibition listed by hometown. Arthur, Kaylee Otto, Atwood, Piper Johnson, Monticello, Connor Alton, and Cole Harper, Villa Grove, Wayne James, Caitlin Ritchie. All events are accessible gallery are free and open to the public. Parkland is a Section 504 ADA compliant institution. Gallery hours are Monday through Wednesday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Thursday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturday, 12 to 2 p.m. To find the gallery during construction, we suggest using the B7 parking lot at the south end of campus. There's an article entitled, Some Crops Have Been Planted But Behind Last Year's Schedule, Douglas County Agriculture, by Larry Dallas. The crops will not be planted early this year in Douglas County, at least by recent standards. We had planted several acres of both corn and soybeans at this point last year. I looked back to the 2022 in our records, we planted most of our acres in May that year. Some acres of both corn and soybeans have been planted. The U.S. Department of Agriculture Crop Progress Report for April 15th shows 2% of both crops planted in Illinois. I would say we're slightly ahead of that in central Illinois. It's still wet in the southern end of the state, and far northern Illinois is always slow to start. Everyone I have talked to says the ground is working up nicely. The fields have been tilled, and the working fields I have driven by look to be in decent shape. Soybean stubble fields work up okay most years, but chiseled chalk fields can be rough and cloddy. They're ready to plant in one trip so far this year. I think it's because we had a milder winter, but there could be several reasons. The trend of planting soybeans before corn or at the same time took hold rapidly in this area. A windshield survey this year would say that there are many more acres of soybeans planted than corn at this point in the spring. The emphasis in the past was always to get the corn in the ground and soybeans after that. Plot results and personal experience show that early planted beans yield well. Soybeans appear to stand cold weather better than corn. However, once a bean emerges, the growing point is above the ground and can freeze off. I have talked before about the role that seed treatments play in the early planting of soybeans. The seed treatment protects the seed from disease and insects. Historically, we planted soybeans without any treatment. We planted them thickly to the end, up with a good stand. I'm not sure when treated, seed corn became more common, but I've never planted corn that was not treated. We continue to ready our equipment for when we start to plant. It struck me the other day that we prepare to plant differently than even a few years ago. The guidance we used on our tractor or planter tractors is a subscription service that must be renewed each year. It gives us accuracy about 1 inch of variation. I like the accuracy of that for our auto steer. Our first day of planting went as you might expect. The planter and the monitor that drives it would not speak to each other. The tractor on the planter had hydraulic oil leak in a recently repaired remote outlet. Electric connection, cleaner fix, the first problem. A mechanic had to put a new gasket on the hydroelectric remote to fix that leak. After a delay of a couple of hours, we were able to get rolling. The grain markets are not concerned about our weather and planting progress yet. Even a short planting window will let us plant a lot of acres quickly. If we go into May, I expect some of the weather premium will come into the markets. Early planting is not required for good yields, but it's a good start. Mexico is dry and Argentina is dry. In addition to that, a new disease has cropped up in South America. They're calling it corn stunt disease. It's carried by an insect and, as you might guess, stunts the corn plants. Yields are being cut by 40 to 50%. The only control I've heard of so far is to kill the leafhoppers that carry the disease. I hope that this disease can be kept in the southern hemisphere, but that might be unlikely. So many of our insect pests and diseases have been imported. Soybean rust is supposed to have blown on the wind first to South America and then to the U.S. It has not been a problem. It was feared it might be at the beginning. The government of Brazil tells its farmers when they can begin to plant soybeans, delaying that until conditions are less favorable to the disease. Nobody has figured out where a couple of recent problems originated. Tar spot in the corn showed up in Illinois and Indiana about 10 years ago. It can cause severe yield loss, and no genetic resistance or shirt treatment has been found. Similarly, stem borer of soybeans has damaged yields in western Iowa. Once the larva is in the plant, it can't be killed. Argentina is not a big corn producer, but a certain size crop has been penciled in by the grain trade. Losing half of that is significant. The Brazilian equivalent of our USDA expects a lower soybean crop than our government does. If the Brazil estimate proves to be accurate, that might help our very cheap soybean price. One of the farm magazines has been running articles and pictures about Ukraine and its agriculture during the war with Russia. In the areas that Russia occupied, there was unbelievable destruction. What the Russians could not carry off, they burned or ruined. Some areas are sown with landmines. I think of landmines as a plate-sized thing, but these are smaller than your hand and hard to see. Many have been injured. A landowner and farmer from Decatur, Howard Buffett, son of famous investor Warren Buffett, has sent 74 combines and 84 tractors to Ukraine to help farmers recover from the war. His foundation is experimenting with a tractor-mounted roller system to set off landmines in farm fields. Our few hours of fighting hydraulic leaks and electronic problems seem pretty tame. Mexico continues to be a good market for our corn and pork. Mexico grows its own white corn for tortillas and imports our yellow corn for animal feed. It's dry enough there that I saw an article that they may have to import white corn, too. We're fortunate to live in a country that does not have to worry about our food supply. So many other parts of the world cannot say that. Thank you for reading about Douglas County and worldwide agriculture this month. Remember to look out for us on the roads a little longer. Another article, Villagros Salon, Maine Attraction, The Maine Salon by Tony Hooker. Growing up in her mom's Philo hair salon left little doubt about the direction Jennifer Kraft's career would eventually take. In fact, she knew from the age of six she too would be a stylist, and now as the owner of Main Salon in downtown Villa Grove, she has seen that come to fruition. Soon after her 2011 graduation from Unity High School, she took the first step to make it a reality by enrolling at the Paul Mitchell School in Normal. Upon graduating, she began a career at Beau Rick's Salon in August of 2012, an experience which led to a great deal of comfort for Jennifer, regardless of whether her client is male or female. At Beau Rick's, it was constant men's cuts all day long, so I got used to them, and I feel I can pretty much whip through them, she recalled after I mentioned how proficiently she had cut my hair. She really doesn't have a preference regarding cutting men's or women's hair, but she did note that after time spent at Bouffant's salon in Urbana, her favorite part of her gig is doing hair coloring, so perhaps the fairer six would get the nod if she were forced to choose. I like to do more flamboyant colors the most. Your hair is light enough that we could do pink or purple color on you, she added with a laugh. One of Jennifer's favorite parts about being a stylist is the flexibility it gives her, especially now that she has her own salon, a benefit she's learned from her mother as a child. My mom did hair in an old garage at our house on our property, she recalled. Once we got older, my brother and sister and I were all in sports, and you know they, her parents, came to every event, so she would get out into the garage and do hair when we were home. After working for a number of shops in Urbana and around the area, after the birth of her second child, Jennifer made the decision to scale back on her hours and work part-time in her mother's shop to save money on both rental and an arrangement she kept for about 5 years before venturing into her current location, in the back of Libby's Art Salon. As a proprietor of her own business, as her mother did before, she too can now tailor her schedule around her 11-year-old daughter and 5-year-old son's activities, including a current stint as head 6U soccer coach, and she unapologetically adamant that her kids will always come first. I will be the same way as my parents were. I will be at everything, every single thing, she emoted. The feeling that family always comes first articulates itself in her dealings with her clients as well, as Kraft is quick to reschedule appointments when children's activities arise. I totally get it, she noted. Parenting always comes first. A major change is on the horizon for Main Salon, as Jennifer recently closed the former Main Street Treasure space and was moving her business to that location at some point this summer. I originally planned on a May 1st opening, but it's April 17th and we're not close. It was just going to be a small project, and now the whole building got it, she said with a smile. I'm really hoping to be able to open in June. With the expanded space comes expanded opportunity, as Jennifer is hoping to invite other stylists in to rent space from her in the future. I want someone who does nails, for sure, she said. I want to be able to bring manicures and pedicures to town. Although she's licensed to do manicures and pedicures, that's not something she enjoys and doesn't see herself doing them in the future, so she'll be looking for someone to rent booth space and perform those types of procedures in her business. She also mentioned the possibility of hiring an esthetician for facials and other services such as full-body waxing. Again, as a licensed cosmetologist, she can do this sort of work, but has chosen to focus on hair over the bulk of her career, letting others focus on skin care. One service that won't be coming to Main Salon is massage, according to Kraft. We have a great one, Main Street Massage and Myofacial, right down the street, so I don't see that being part of that sort of need, she explained. For now, Kraft has no interest in expanding to other locations as Main Salon takes root. I'm just going to focus on building this one to be the best one it can be, she said. I like being part of this downtown, and I'm not looking to go anywhere else. Native Plant Festival May 4th at Parkland. There will be a Native Plant Festival and sale on May 4th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Parkland Community College, the West Building, Tony Noel Ag Building, in Champaign. This Native Plant Festival aims to provide the resources for people to establish their own pollinator gardens and supply information about how they can support the planet. This event is perfect for anyone who wants to purchase plants, learn more about the environment, or have some fun. Environment-based organizations will be present with materials and speakers to discuss with people how they can shape their impact on the environment. Booths that will be presented include Pollinator Partnership, Xerxes Society, the Illinois Natural History Survey, and Master Gardens Naturalist Gardener Program, and more. Some topics will be covered are wetlands restoration and information about the organization itself. These booths will be in one area together and are meant to be the hub of education and outreach. Crafts and games will be held to engage people of all ages and open their eyes to the wonders of nature. Multiple workshops will be offered to discuss topics such as biodiversity, plant photography, oak trees, prairies, and more. Each workshop will happen twice in the duration of the festival. People are welcome to attend the workshops if they're interested and seat themselves. A native plant vendor called the Wild Midwest will sell Illinois native plants featuring species from Illinois that can be grown in sun, shade, moist soils, and any other conditions. That is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye and see you again next week.